All right, our second talk in the evening oral presentation session is going to be from Ed Edmonds, and he is going to tell us about injuries in the stands and how Major League Baseball is responding with extended netting.
Well, good afternoon, and thank you for coming to hear a little bit of a talk about injuries in the stands and what Major League Baseball has been doing to kind of respond to this. And what I really want to do with my time today is talk a little bit about the historical origin of the baseball rule and the legal ramifications of that, and then talk about what's been happening in recent time in terms of making some changes in the way courts are looking at this, and then really what's happened particularly before the beginning of this year. So I'm going to start with this brief history of the baseball rule. And unfortunately, you're going to be subjected to a little bit of legalese and the actual language from some of these cases. But most people recognize the Crane versus Kansas City baseball case as the first reported appellate decision of a case involving a foul ball injury. And the Missouri Court of Appeals rendered this case. It involved an individual who attended a game at Association Park. The Kansas City Blues were part of the American Association at the time. He purchased a grandstand ticket, which would have allowed him to sit in a screened area, but chose instead to sit in the bleachers, so outside of that area. And notice in the opinion that they said he had that option of sitting in the screened area. He went for the latter. He was struck by a foul ball in that particular area and was injured. And they set up what is called a duty that then really is extrapolated into what became the baseball rule. And they start off with a very simple explanation of what in 1913 would have been the business visitor rule, which is that as a proprietor of a baseball stadium, you had a responsibility to protect within a standard of reasonable care, and that this was commensurate with this set of circumstances. And they said, as long as you provided this area of screened seating, which was closest to a home plate, that you had dealt with your duty, as long as you provided enough of that for those that you figured would typically want that type of protection. So in this particular instance in Crane, you find two very important legal doctrines that relate to foul balls, and that is that you assume the risk of any ordinary circumstance of which foul balls should be well understood as, or thrown balls or bats entering the stands, and that also you would then be perceived as being contributorily negligent by choosing to sit in an open area as opposed to sitting in a screened area. So either assumption of risk or contributory negligence, which both in legal terms were an absolute bar to you as a plaintiff in terms of being able to recover in a case for being injured by a foul ball. The next year in 1914, the same court considered a case in the same stadium in which Edling actually seated himself behind the catcher's box. I like the language in the opinion. And actually, because the net was not kept in serviceable condition, there was a hole in the net that was so large that the foul ball went through the hole in the net and hit the fan. And in that instance, they said that, indeed, the plaintiff could proceed with the lawsuit because it was a defective net that was there. And that in that instance, you didn't assume the risk that the net would not be, or the netting or the screening wouldn't be taken care of properly. And thus, Edling couldn't be considered to be contributorily negligent. Well, there's also a history, of course, of the right to keep foul balls. And there's two things that I want to talk about here. First of all, when Charles Wiegman became the owner of the Chicago Whales in the Federal League and moved the team to the north side and went head-to-head with Major League Baseball in that town, he decided to allow fans to keep foul balls that were hit into the stadium. And then when he was allowed to purchase the Chicago Cubs as part of the peace agreement that resolved the Federal League, he initially went along with the rule, but then in 1916, partway through the season, decided to change the rule. He made one change, though, and that is that he put a 10-foot screen in the right field to prevent certain balls from going into the stands so that he wouldn't have to replace those balls. But most of you may well know of Rubin's rule, which is really the case that, and the set of facts that actually created the situation in which Major League Baseball changed its policy to allow fans to keep foul balls. And this is from a 1921 game at the Polo Grounds, and Rubin Berman caught a foul ball, and when they came to get the foul ball away from him, he tossed it over his shoulder back further in the crowd. They hauled him out, refunded his money, but told him he had to leave the stadium for abusing the rule. He filed suit. He sought $20,000 for, amongst other things, unlawful detention and false imprisonment and mental and bodily stress. The jury sided with him, but they only gave him $100 in damages for that. But as a result of this, Major League Baseball decided henceforth that fans who caught foul balls would be allowed to keep them. Then, fast forwarding a little bit, and there's really hundreds of reported decisions on foul ball cases, so I'm just hitting a couple of the major ones. Here, Brisson versus, this is a Minnesota case versus the Minneapolis Baseball and Athletic Association, so really involving Nicolet Park, where the Millers played. And Brisson actually sat in an emergency seat, as some of you may know. At certain overflow crowds, they would allow you to stand in the outfield or along the foul lines if there weren't bleachers there. And here they really reinforce the requirement that you must screen the most dangerous area, which is the area right around home plate. Then the case is probably most noted for the specific statement of the baseball rule is Aikens versus Glens Falls City School District, a New York case which has been very often cited for its kind of classic statement. The interesting thing about this case is that it involved a high school game, not a professional game. And Robin Aikens came in and stood, as many of you have gone to high school games, there's very little screening, and stood down the third baseline and suffered a serious and permanent eye injury as a result of being struck by a foul ball, sued the city school district. The interesting thing about this from a legal standpoint is that New York, by this time, had adopted a comparative negligence standard. And the importance of the comparative negligence standard is that it removes assumption of the risk and contributory negligence as complete bars to recovery. And this went to a jury, and the jury said 65% of the fault belonged to the school district and 35% of the fault belonged to Robin Aikens as the plaintiff, and they were going to apportion damages based on that. But on appeal, the court granted a judgment notwithstanding this particular verdict and cited the majority rule, which states that you must screen the area closest to home plate, and as long as you have a sufficient amount of that kind of screened area for those that you figure are likely to want to sit there, you have done your duty in terms of ownership of a team or ownership of the stadium. So here they said, because there was sufficient screening for an area that they thought would accommodate the people who would come to a high school game in Glens Falls, that was sufficient, and Robin Aikens couldn't recover anything at all. Now, there's also been an effort by four states, so it's a very small number of them, to actually codify by legislative enactment the baseball rule. And I'm going to focus really on Illinois here, because Illinois adopted this as a result of cases against their two major league teams, the Cubs and the White Sox. And in 1992, the statute went into effect, and it was a result, first of all, of a 1983 incident in which a 10-year-old who was sitting behind home plate was injured by a foul ball. Notice the 5-day hospital stay, the severe headaches, a big jury verdict of $67,500. And then in 1986 incident involved the Chicago White Sox in the Cornell lawsuit, where somebody was sitting down the first baseline, got struck by a foul ball, broke their jaw, and they were actually just three seats on the other side of the screening that was on the inside of the dugout, so dugout from dugout around and behind home plate. So what happened is that both teams went to the Illinois legislature and almost immediately got legislation passed so that they would never be found liable for a foul ball incident again by enforcing the baseball rule. So now, in recent times, you've had some states moving away from this. In part, it's because of this comparative negligence, which should remove this idea of contributory negligence or assumption of risk being a complete bar from plaintiffs who are trying to sue. Plaintiffs continue to sue, although they almost never win. I'm sometimes surprised that they still do that. But in Idaho, in 2013, and I've been to the stadium, I have a daughter and grandchildren, son-in-law who live in Boise, and so I've been to the stadium. If you can see the image up on the screen, you can see there's not a lot of screen protection there. But this was a fan who had actually been there a lot of times. And in this particular instance, they said, Idaho is not going to follow the baseball rule. We're going to allow this case to proceed to a jury through a trial because they don't really feel that the baseball rule is a legitimate explanation of what the public policy should be with respect to fans who attend baseball games. Then in Indiana, the state where I live right now, the South Shore baseball case involving DeJesus, this is actually the team in Gary, which is actually owned by a colleague of mine who's an adjunct faculty member at Notre Dame. And notice here that they reference the states that have actually passed legislation, like Illinois, the neighbor next door, and said, well, you could do this statutorily, but we are not going to adopt this by judicial fiat. And in fact, they rejected an earlier Indiana case in which the baseball rule was held to be the statement of the law in the state of Indiana. So two recent cases that just flat out reject the baseball rule. And then you have a very sad case in a sense of the result of the injury, and that is in New Mexico involving the city of Albuquerque, where a four-year-old who was sitting in a picnic area out beyond the left field wall was hit by a ball and suffered a skull fracture. Now, not surprisingly, there was no screen in the outfield that would protect you from trying to grab a home run ball, which was where the picnic area actually is. And you might not be able to see it from where you're sitting up there, but it's, you know, right down the left field line. But not surprisingly, you're talking about a four-year-old who certainly doesn't assume a risk that they'd be hit by a home run ball. The case is interesting in that it says that batting practice, which is when he was struck by the foul ball, broke out unannounced. And I'm thinking, Judge, I don't know what kind of baseball games you've ever been to, but everything in terms of the time the game starts, the time batting practice, infield practice, any of that, that's very, very regulated. So you would have known when this was starting. It wouldn't have been a surprise to you. But here they come up with a new rule, and again, you get this fancy language in cases that's symmetrical to the duty of the spectator is what they talk about. Well, what are they saying here? So they're saying, first of all, that the spectator is responsible for ordinary care of protection, so watching the game carefully, paying attention to what's going on, but that the owner, in this particular instance, a municipality, has the ordinary care not to increase the inherent risk. And in this particular case, they said that it's the responsibility of the jury or the judge, if it's a non-jury trial, to kind of consider out the balance between those two things. But keep in mind that this one is interesting because this is a small child, pretty severe injury, but also a situation involving a picnic area where you are not really necessarily paying attention to what's going on. You're there as part of a big crowd to eat. Where this has come into things most recently, there's a case, Coomer, that involves Slugger, who's the mascot for the Kansas City Royals, who was shooting hot dogs into the stand and hit somebody in the eye and caused a severe eye injury. And they said, well, that's not an ordinary risk. You expect to potentially have to deal with foul balls or thrown balls or bats going into the stands or parts of bats going into the stands, but not hot dogs being shot through a cannon into the stands. And notice that in Edward C. versus City of Albuquerque, they actually outright flatly reject the baseball rule in Aiken, saying because it's extreme and unyielding, so it doesn't allow for any balancing that they set out in the test that they created. So Let me talk a little bit about the recent injuries. And I think one of the things to take into consideration here, because there's a lot of passion about this and a lot of people who say, I don't want additional screening. I want to be able to catch foul balls. I want players to be able to flip balls to me as they're leaving the field between innings. But a lot of these injuries that I'm going to talk about in the next couple minutes really are life-changing injuries, loss of an eye, severe medical expenses and things like that. Andy Zlotnick, who was injured in 2011 at Yankee Stadium in a game versus the Yankees and the Athletics, has been the most vocal about this, and you can find him typically being interviewed for instances in which reporters are talking about recent injuries. A severe eye injury, look at that, left eye injury, fractured upper jaw, sinus fracture, really extensive damages. And then Keith Rollins, who sued over an injury in Cleveland, who lost the sight of his left eye. Some of you, if you're Red Sox fans, might remember that part of Brett Lowry's bat went into the stands at Fenway Park, and Tanya Carpenter was hurt very seriously there in 2015. And here in Pittsburgh, I was actually watching this game on TV since I live in the Chicago Cubs area, but you might be able to see she's got a black coat on and blonde hair and her back turned towards Starling Castro, who fouled a ball straight back and the screen depressed enough that she was hitting in the side of the head and went down. There was about 20 minutes of attendance to her injury there on the site. But notice right behind her, if you can see it on the screen, there was the usher was actually allowing her to go to her seat while the game action was going on. But this case, as far as I know, is still in litigation. She suffered some severe facial injuries as a result of this. But this case can be different because much like the Edlin case that I mentioned earlier where the ball went through a hole in the screen, in this particular instance, she was hit because the screen depressed perhaps too much. And so that might be some negligence there. Jay Luce, who's suing the Chicago Cubs in Major League Baseball, the Cubs part was thrown out, but the case is still going forward with respect to Major League Baseball. But interestingly here, I think this is going to be very difficult because Illinois has a statute that codifies the baseball rule. And also in 2015 in Miller Park, again, look at that, multiple fractures, over 30 stitches, medical bills topping $200,000. So, and I, in almost all these instances, if you want to, you can see the severity of the injuries because you can look online and you'll see images of these individuals. And I didn't put them up there because they're really, I think, too graphic for some of you to want to see. The thing that really tipped the scales was Todd Frazier's foul ball that hit a little girl sitting on a grandfather's lap, a two-year-old girl, at Yankee Stadium last September. And you see Todd Frazier kneeling there, very difficult injury. So all of this is kind of a catalyst for a change in Major League Baseball's approach to all of this. There's a Bloomberg study that's really important in all of this, talking about the number of injuries for foul balls. Now, admittedly, the number that are severe as the ones I just showed you are relatively few compared to this 1,750 injuries, most of which are minor. In 2015, Rob Manfred came out with a policy recommendation, and the recommendation basically said that you should screen between the near end of the dugouts. And so in 2015, a few major league teams changed their configurations of their screening to match this. But 70 feet from home plate is really not all that far. The biggest thing that has changed about Major League Baseball is there's about 20% fewer or less foul ball territory in the more modern Major League Baseball stadiums, and that actually reduces the amount of reaction time that any fan could have, particularly sitting behind the dugouts. So as a result of that, and I'm going to kind of wrap up with a few images here of PNC Park and some other stadiums, notice the new netting. So again, the existing netting at PNC Park, as noted in the diagram, was between the inside of the home and visitors' dugout. The new netting, as you can see, stretches to the far end of the dugout. And I think this is a good effort to try to protect, again, the area that's most dangerous, where foul balls are likely to enter the stands. And there you can see kind of another angle of it, but if you're sitting just to the first base side of the dugout there for the Pirates, you can see that where that new netting has taken an effect there. Very similar thing that went on at Nationals Park in Washington, D.C. And notice that for the most part they're angling that netting down, so it's not going all the way across in most of these changes that have been made. But you can see the difference in the screening for Nationals Park as well as PNC Park in these shots. Very similar situation to Kauffman Stadium in Kansas City, where you can see, again, that they're now moving to extend almost all of these to the far end of the dugout. Safeco Field, it may be hard for you to see from where you're sitting, but again, far end of the dugouts, and in this instance, it's not angled. It's actually kind of straight up and down, just like behind home plate. Citi Field changed theirs as well. The problem in Yankee Stadium is they put them in with large poles initially, and fans couldn't see through the poles. They could see through the netting, but they removed those about 2 weeks after they were installed. And there you see Camden Yards. One of the things that's changed about this has also to do with fan notification. And you'll see if you go to their website, they actually explain to you what, and they asterisk each section now where the seating is behind the screens. But notice here again, they're kind of reinforcing the baseball rule. If you choose to sit outside of one of those sections, you assume all risk of injury as a result of that. And I'll finish up here by noting that this is also impacting spring training sites as well as minor league stadiums. Here's a change in netting for the Pensacola Blue Wahoos. And again, you'll see here the change in fan notification. You'll see the little asterisk by all the sections that are screened in. So that's the presentation. Hopefully you've endured a little bit of a conversation about the legal aspects of all of this and have a feel for what might be a different experience for some of you going to ballparks, sitting particularly between the inside end of the dugout and the far end of the dugout, where screening has been brought in all major league parks at the beginning of this season. So thank you, and I'll take some questions.
You touched on this right at the end, Ed. I noticed during spring training out in Arizona, and Arizona is a state that has statutorily mandated the baseball rule.
Right.
There are a number of stadiums in Arizona for spring training that do not have extended netting, even after Manfred's edict came down. I'm thinking specifically of the Peoria Stadium. I think there was one other where I noticed it, that sitting behind the dugout really was a dangerous situation.
Right. I had some images that I didn't put in here with respect to time, because I am fortunate enough to go to the 9 spring training conference every year, and I've been to all the parks in Arizona and took pictures this year of them, and a couple of them had changed. I know that I think Maryvale had made a change, but... And Surprise did, but I think Salt River had not. So I had images of those that I could have brought here, but I wouldn't be surprised if they don't make those changes before next year. I'll be real interested.
Hi. So despite that, the baseball rule has, in practical terms, universally indemnified baseball against lawsuits. You know, with all the high-profile injuries of the past few years, you know, people have cameras and they take pictures, and so we're seeing all this a lot more. And the toddler at Yankee Stadium, I mean, you know, that was a tipping point, as you say. So I understand why Major League stadiums have extended the netting to where they have, to varying degrees in various stadiums. But now it seems like they've created a situation where now they're admitting, where before they were kind of indemnified, now they're admitting that they have some responsibility when a fan gets hurt because they're responding by extending the net. And they're also making the discretionary decision as to where that net's going to end. So people in this seat are going to be protected, but people in that seat aren't going to be protected. And it's only a matter of time, I think, before a boss sneaks around the other side of the net, clocks a guy in the eye or clocks a kid in the eye, and then it's going to be an uproar again. Then they're going to get sued. Now maybe all of a sudden they're not so indemnified because they've admitted it by extending the nets. So I guess my question to you is that really a thing? And do you think that because of that, once that inevitable thing happens, do you think they're going to end up extending the nets all the way to the foul pole and possibly all the way around the stadium when somebody in the outfield gets an eyeful of home run ball because he's looking up from his phone seeing what all the commotion is?
Right. I think the move that they've made now, that this is something that is often talked about in torts class, which is that any time a company manufactures a new product and says it's safer, mm-hmm. it's basically saying if you have my old product, it's not as safe.
Right.
I think this was a good move, though, because this is the area. This area actually now I think is much more like home plate in the era in which the baseball rule was created, and I think baseball mm-hmm. needed to be proactive. I thought Rob Manfred made a mistake when he said, basically, you don't need to change it. Mm-hmm. So I think in that particular instance, but most states still kind of follow the baseball rule, so mm-hmm. I think a lot of them that will come in a situation like you said where maybe down the first or third baseline, somebody gets injured and comes in and sues, I think in a lot of those situations, they'll say the baseball rule is still in effect in this state, the precedent's still there, and we're going to continue to follow it. So I think this will save some fans some injuries, mm-hmm. and I think at this point Major League Baseball won't suffer from somebody saying, well, you should have gone further than you did.
Right. Well, yeah, and that'll just get prosecuted in the court of public opinion,
right.
And then it goes from there. All right.
And, you know, we'll see when those cases come forward, because they continue to file cases despite the fact that the baseball rule for 75 or 80 years, almost no states backed away from it.
Right. Okay.
So I'm kind of curious. A lot of the examples are like line drive foul balls, but there's also the pop foul balls that often aren't protected from, you know, doom from above. Is there any is there any movement to do anything about that, or is that just considered too rare to be concerned because people have time to move?
I think that's considered to be too rare. The general thought is that if it's enough of a pop fly foul ball, that you should be able to kind of protect yourself from that. These, you know, the situations, I might be not remembering this correctly, but you're typically talking about less than 2 seconds for a fan to react to most line drives that would reach the stadium. And quite frankly, your ability to react, even if you're paying really good attention to the game, is not good. So I think this is protecting a lot of fans from the more serious problems. So I think that's the end of my time. I actually am the author of Baseball Meets the Law. I'm going to be over in the McFarland booth. If you also have some questions about the baseball rule or this, I'm heading over there right now. So thanks for coming out, and feel safer at Major League Stadiums this year.